My name is Forrest Wilder. I'm associate editor with the Texas Observer. Thank you all for coming tonight. We have a very esteemed panel here with us. The format is basically we're going to have a discussion for an hour, hour and 15. We'll leave at least 15 minutes for questions. So if y'all can keep your color commentary under wraps until then, appreciate it. So I'll start right here with Representative Donna Howard, a Democrat from Austin. Well, one interesting thing to note is that when Representative Howard came into office in 2006, she was the only white Democratic woman in the Texas legislature. As time went on, she got a few colleagues to join her, but after last week's election, she's back to being the only white Democratic female in the Texas legislature. She is, what's it, WD-40 woman? We need a new...
I'm
WD-1. WD-1. Yeah, there we go. And this is Harvey Kronberg, the editor, publisher, owner, and impresario of the Quorum Report. There you go. We have Erica Greeter, senior editor at Texas Monthly. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. She has a cover story, right? She has a story, a big feature. See, I only read the web version, so sorry about that. About Dan Patrick, which y'all should really check out. It is she has a debate with Lieutenant Governor-elect Dan Patrick about ISIS and the border, and it's really worth reading. We have Chris Hooks. He is a political writer for the Texas Observer. I don't know any other parts of your resume, so. And on our far left, although on the right, from the audience perspective.
You're right.
That's right. We have Representative Jason Villalba. He's a Republican from Dallas. Okay. And with that out of the way, I thought I would start with Harvey. Yeah.
Sure.
Chill on the spot. I think it was the next day after the election, on Wednesday of last week, you had an interesting piece that was a bit of a contrarian take, and you did start the piece by saying you had written in a sleep-deprived haze. But you're kind of dealing with the question of whether the outcome of the election here in Texas was largely driven by structural and national factors, or it had more to do with the strength of the candidates and just what's happening here in Texas. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. First of all, I think that that of course it was a very dramatic and exciting election for some people, but we've made much ado about not so much. Structurally, Republicans have an automatic advantage in Texas in midterm elections because you've just got unless you have a very unpopular Republican president that people are driving around schools to vote against. Women, minorities, and young people just simply do not turn out in midterm elections. And so you start with that. Second, this was clearly a referendum election. Just look at the straight ticket voting. This was a referendum on a president who seemed to have gone into a fetal position. And ironically, 2 years ago when he won with a substantial margin, won the popular vote. Most of the country thought we were going in the wrong direction. Unemployment was still high. The economy sucked. This time we've got 5.9% unemployment. The economy is growing pretty substantially. And the president was AWOL with no story to tell, apparently. So it became a national referendum. The exit polls indicated that nobody is popular right now. Nobody is popular. Finally, the one thing that's not in the story is we've discovered that since then that Republican technology, first of all, most of the folks that have moved and registered to Texas in Texas are Republican voters, and second, Republican technology and micro-targeting was just extraordinary, and not just here, but all over the country. And the Democrats own the technology for two election cycles, and right now the Republicans own the technology.
And so you mentioned briefly the low turnout. I think there was a story out yesterday that said that turnout nationally was the lowest since 1942, you know, amid World War II. Texas, we had very low, the lowest voter turnout, I believe, of any of the 50 states, which is not unusual, but is interesting in light of Battleground Texas and some of the Democratic efforts to have a field operation to do GOTV on a larger scale with more money than we've seen before. Erica, Chris, could you all address those points?
Well, I would start by saying I think Battleground Texas was just horribly managed from start to finish, probably made things worse for Democrats than they were already going to be in the end. And I have nothing but bad things to say about that group's mission or leadership. I mean, the volunteers who worked for Battleground Texas, and of course, I think volunteers on both sides put their time and effort into campaigns, and that's really awesome. But the way they approached this, I think you saw from the outset they didn't really have very clear metrics. They didn't have any metrics at all about what they were going to do as far as voter registration, voter turnout. They weren't setting any goals that could be measured beyond the sort of nebulous, we're going to change the culture, we're going to sort of be Democrat-y and get some press. And that played out. It kind of became an occasion for Texas Republicans to point to the specter of national Democrats, Obama Democrats, trying to turn the state blue, which they were trying to do. I mean, it was astroturfing a national outfit in Texas. But without the kind of corresponding focus on actually campaigning and building some groundwork here in the state, I think Battleground Texas' role was just appallingly bad for Texas Democrats, and we'll probably have echoes for 20 years to come. Chris?
I mean, it was obviously a national election. I think the problem is that you see some Democrats saying it was a national election, and that's the primary problem. I mean, the nice thing about a margin like this is that we don't really have to argue about what didn't work and what did work. Clearly, like, nothing worked. There were people that were trying to reach out to moderate voters, Republican voters. Very clearly, almost none of them turned out, which you can tell by the difference in the margin between Wendy Davis and Jim Hogan, who didn't campaign. And there was all of the work that was done registering new voters and turning out new voters didn't seem to materialize very much. I think the other thing is Democrats should hope that national climate is not the primary factor, because that doesn't get better for Democrats over time. The fact that we elect statewide figures during midterm years is not going to change. This is kind of the electorate that they're stuck with. And if all of the investment that was put into the current cycle produced only marginal benefits, I think Democrats have some really hard questions to ask themselves about what they're going to do next cycle.
Representative Howard, I feel like maybe that's a pretty bleak view. I don't know if you have a different take or a different way to look at it.
Well, I'm not the political analyst, so you know, my thoughts on this are something that I talk with my staff about, and you know, BS with people about. It's not like I have a real particular insight here, but you know, when you look at the, absolutely, the Democrats were clobbered. You know, nobody, I think, disputes that. But when we look at the numbers and compare them to 2010, to the previous midterm, there were, you get past the governor's race and the Democrats down ballot statewide, either got more raw number votes or a higher percentage than in 2010. Whereas if you look at the down ballot in the on the Republican side, they had less. So whatever that means, I'm not sure yet, other than it does appear that the Democrats did make some steps forward in terms of voter turnout, obviously nowhere near what it needed to be. When I looked at my own race, where I didn't have a hugely contested race, you know, I got the second highest number of votes of any House race in the state. And in the overall turnout in my district, if I look at the contested races in the House, two primarily in Harris County and in Bayer, those two candidates that we lost, incumbents that we lost, had a turnout that was half of the turnout I had, or even only 25% of the turnout I had. So clearly, there was a huge problem with getting people to the polls in this race. And in places where we were expecting to have big turnouts, it did not happen.
So, Representative Villalba, I want to go to the question of Republicans and the Hispanic vote. There were some exit polls that indicated that Greg Abbott got, I think it was 42-43%, which looks to be somewhat better than some of the other Republican statewide candidates. On the other hand, it was an extremely low turnout election, so maybe there's you can read too much into that. I just wonder what your thoughts are about what Greg Abbott did right and what the other candidates, including Dan Patrick, did or didn't do to reach out to Hispanics.
Well, I think if you look at the objective of the Abbott campaign, one of the concerns that they had immediately was reaching out to this new and fast-growing demographic, and they spent a considerable amount of time engaging Hispanics in places where his Republicans had not historically been. So the Rio Grande Valley, the colonias of El Paso and San Antonio, a number of places. And if you look at the campaign, it was primarily predicated on his wife, Cecilia, who is Hispanic, and of course his mother-in-law. The commercial that everyone knows and probably remembers most from the campaign was Cecilia Abbott. And her mother-in-law. So I think what you saw was a concerted effort to really understand this emerging demographic in a way that we haven't seen before and to engage Hispanics in a way we haven't seen before. And I do think that resulted in some real fruit for the Abbott campaign. I think many of the other statewides were able to ride on those coattails. George P. Bush, of course, has his own appeal, his mother being fully Mexican, Colomba. And so you ended up seeing an electorate where 44% was actually his number of the Hispanic population voted for the Republican candidate. Now, granted, only 17% of the Hispanics turned out. So it's very difficult to make really long-term judgments and prognostications based on that sample size. We're going to need a bigger sample size to determine whether or not we've really made an impact in that community. But what I think you are seeing is a real turning point where a statewide candidate like Abbott, who was, I think, very thoughtful and very reasonable as far as his rhetoric and how he campaigned, really has made a concerted effort to make a difference in this community. And I think most Republicans sort of stand back and look at this and say, you know, here's a way to win more voters. We're winning the Anglo vote, right? And we're going to continue to win that Anglo vote until Democrats can present a value proposition that is superior to that of the Republicans, which I don't think they have done. But now, if we can cut deeply into the Hispanic vote, I think it's very difficult to overcome that structural advantage that Republicans have. Make no mistake, Battleground Texas was an abject failure, right? I mean, Bill White was able to get 42% of the Republican vote in a very similar midterm election. You know, Wendy Davis, who is a wonderfully capable candidate, you know, she had every checkbox that you would want from a candidate that appeals to the left. She failed miserably, and she had tens of millions of dollars that were placed at her back to win that. And so I think that there's a real structural advantage that Republicans have shown that they're capable of seizing upon to control the state infrastructure for the foreseeable future. I don't see how you overcome that. Maybe, you know, Harvey's got something to say about that.
Well, I think that the most important moment of the campaign was when Tom Paakin withdrew from the primary and suddenly Greg Abbott was the only one on the slate who was freed from having to pander to the Republican base. It astonished me that Democrats never tried to make it an Abbott-Patrick ticket and allowed Patrick to go underground and not have to defend many of the things that he had said during the primary. I do not believe that Hispanics are automatically Democratic voters by any stretch of the imagination, but I know that that Jason's been instrumental going around the state trying to talk to grassroots Republicans to soften the rhetoric. When everything is said and done, the fact that Abbott didn't have to compete for one of those 1 million Republican primary, most inflamed primary voters, set the tone for the rest of the election and allowed Dan Patrick to be submerged and some of the things the other down ballot candidates said.
Can I jump on that though? I think I agree with this as far as an assessment of Abbott and Hispanic voters, but I think it's worth pointing out that what Abbott did with Hispanic voters wasn't necessarily new. I mean, you saw George Bush in his 98 re-election campaign win 40% of the Hispanic vote. We don't have great data in general on Texas turnout and polling breakdowns. We don't often have exit polls and so on. But in 2013, Karl Rove said in Georgia, that Georgia State Convention to Republicans there, that Texas Republicans average about 40% of the Hispanic vote. And PolitiFact looked at that and looked at Kay Bailey's races, Rick Perry's races, Ted Cruz's polls, Dewhurst's polls, and found that was about true. And this time around, too, Abbott gets 44% in exit polls. Patrick, who has, if anything, more occasion to lose Hispanic voters because of some of his rhetoric and the fact that he was running against a Hispanic Democrat in the general election, wins 46%. John Cornyn wins 48%. That could be all because Abbott's sort of the top of the ticket and setting the tone, and there's not enough focus being paid to the granularity between the candidates. But thinking about it all, my sense is that a lot of the disjunct we see between Hispanic voters and Anglo voters today is about things like age, economic status, geography. I mean, you see in Abbott's Hispanic vote totals, there's a disjunct between women and men, where he, I think, narrowly edged Davis among Hispanic men, 49-48, but lost Hispanic women, only won 39% of their votes compared to two-thirds of the Anglo women's vote. To me, that seems like a result that's not about ethnicity or culture or anything related to being Hispanic per se, but more about the fact that in Texas, younger people are Hispanic and older folks are Anglos. And so young women are more drawn to Davis's pro-choice stance, among other things, perhaps, and older women are not as concerned with that issue.
But I do think it's worthy of pointing out that nationwide, the number is in the low 30s, right? So Texas, much lower than that. So the Texas Hispanic is philosophically predisposed differently than the national Hispanic. And I think that's telling. And I think also you can point to the fact that Abbott and Bush and others have determined that this is important. I mean, I think you saw with the appointment today of Judge Cascos that this administration believes that this is an important issue, and they're going to continue to seize upon it, not only with respect to campaigning, but with the governing. And I think that's an important turning point that we're making. Now, that's not to denigrate Governor Bush. Governor Bush had a number of Hispanic appointments. But I think what you see with the rhetoric and the focus and the campaign's positions on this, that Hispanics are becoming a major player. Now, they're not showing up at the ballots like they need to, in Texas, but I think Republicans are finally, as a collective, recognizing and acknowledging that we better get on board with this group, this growing demographic, because failure to do so will lead unquestionably to our demise.
Well, I want to say, too, I think it was in Quorum Report today, Eric Bierce?
Yes.
An article talking about the need for Republicans to soften their rhetoric, though, when it gets to what's going to be going on with, say, immigration policy in particular, and that it needs to be focused on the real issues that are involving security and whatever's going on at the border, but get past some of the negative rhetoric, or you're going to actually see that go the opposite direction.
And there will be 8 million voters in Texas in 2016, not 4.8 million voters participating.
And the Hispanic community has historically been very supportive of a Hillary Clinton-type candidate, and it looks like she's on the ballot. I think that does change the dynamic. We have to do a better job. It's a courting process. It's not something you can just knock on the door in an election period and say, okay, we're here, vote for us. We have to do a better job as Republicans of engaging the community, being respectful and thoughtful, and articulating the value proposition of what our party stands for. We have not done a wonderful job of that. I think you're seeing at least an effort being made to do that. If we can do that consistently in the next election cycle, in the next legislative session, I think we've got a real opportunity, particularly if we present someone like a Marco Rubio as our horse in the 2016 election cycle.
Or how about a Ted Cruz?
Ted's a friend.
Just one quick observation from somebody older than Dirt. The first, I believe it was the first Hispanic Secretary of State, was also a former Cameron County judge named Tony Garza, who was appointed by George W. Bush. And so it's directly out of the George W. Bush outreach playbook and makes an enormous amount of sense. Cameron County has a strong Republican Hispanic community.